You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, the 2021 March Madness champion. The votes are in, the tallies have been counted, it's all over but the crying, people. Welcome to Cobras and Fire, March Madness bracket busting special edition here. We announce champion. My name is Baco, and I am joined, as always, by the bad LC Fox. Good morning, LC.
Good morning to you. I'm excited. This journey is coming to a climactic end.
It has been almost to a T what I was hoping it would be, and it maybe even a little bit better you, Chris, and Aaron bringing your own selection of eight to add to the group of 30 to make the group of 32 to the people voting. I had like a minimum number of votes I was hoping to get on average, and we exceeded that, so I was happy with that. A lot of close contests, but a lot of blowouts too. So did you enjoy the process? You seem to give me the hardest time as far as how this whole thing was going to work, but yet once we started, you really didn't seem to that confused once things got rolling.
No, I mean, as it went along, my bracket, definitely wasn't completely carved in stone because it changed and it was different and there was a lot of mayhem that the methods didn't follow. And
well, that was a close one, though.
Yeah.
Final four, baby.
Exactly. And so it was exciting. There was definitely upsets, and it shows that it doesn't matter what be it sports or terrible albums, there's no way to completely predict the outcome. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it definitely. Well, one person predicted the outcome.
The outcome, but the journey wasn't the.
Gorky Park. I threw that in there as a lark, and now I'm kind of rooting for Gorky Park next year. I really. I was kind of. I don't think. It held in really close in that second round, almost making it to the Elite Eight. But the fact that it even won as an eight seed the first round was quite an eye opener for me. Also finding out there's people who actually liked a lot of these records. Extreme 3 was one that got some blowback. The Pretty Boy Floyd record that I picked, I'm like, I think I said it in one of the recaps that I had no idea anybody liked that record, but the members of Pretty Boy Floyd.
Can I tell you, I should have, right now I can already predict Gorky Park winning because Russia will, of course, interfere with the election.
Putin.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's going to take his shirt off, hop on a horse, and
campaign across the country for it.
So yeah, so those who were voting, first of all, thank you. The championship game was extremely close. The winner won by 9 total votes.
Yeah.
If you were paying attention, it came down to Metallica and Lou Reed's Lulu record, and Peter Criss, One for All. We'll be announcing the winner here in just a minute. But, yeah, so I think we could do this again next year. I think Chris and Aaron were the perfect two guys to bring on for this. They seem to kind of mesh with what we were doing, but at the same time bring their own kind of bad records. ZZ Top Afterburner was something I would have never thought about, but that actually really did very well in the bracket.
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting one too. The only criticism I'll say about this whole process is it is much easier just for you and I to go, does this album suck? It sure does. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. You know, and I say I am volunteering to do all the counting again next year. So, but
I'm not.
Yeah, that's just it. So we got a year to figure it out, but I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we can get it done. But if not, we'll figure something else out like we do every year.
Sure.
But anyway, as the voting went on, I would like to note that people seemed to grasp the whole concept a little better. A lot of people were voting that hadn't listened to the episode. And so a couple of those first round matchups might have gone a different way or been a little tighter. Had some of the people, I know there was a handful, but it seemed like by the time we were in the second half of the first round, people really understood what was going on. And
that is Facebook tradition, and that is commenting on the headline before reading the article.
Yeah, yes. It's one of your favorite social media habits.
Yes, but please continue. At least it's consistent.
Before we actually name the winner, though, I'd like to read just the heading of one of the reviews I found for this album on Amazon. And this comes from Amazon user Grant, and it simply says, "Please don't make me listen to this ever again." So that's a precursor. That could really fit either record, don't you think?
Yeah, and most of our podcast reviews.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. Let's announce the winner. With a margin of 9 votes, Metallica Lulu did not win. Peter Criss, One for All is the 2021 March Madness bracket winning album of I guess 2021. I already said that. Yeah. Congratulations, Peter. You suck.
The ball is in. There you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star, and all the years no one knows just how hard you worked. But now it shows. One shining moment you knew you were alive. Feel the beat of your heart, feel the wind in your face. It's more than a contest, it's more than a race.
Yeah, okay, can you break that down, how it was across the three different voting groups, who kind of pulled it up ahead, or does that matter?
Well, in our group, first of all, it was close in all three. It only won by 2 votes on Twitter, but it had a little bit bigger victory in the on the Decibel Geek group. But in the Cobras and Fire group page, Lulu actually won, but not by enough to surpass the margins that he had gained on the other two groups. So, like I said, it was only 9 votes total that separated the two albums. So it was very close. And actually, halfway through, about 12 hours into it, Lulu was ahead. So, you know, and typically at about the halfway point, most of the ones that were leading won. You know, there wasn't too many come from behind wins.
Yes, I have to say that when this news came out, I'm not sure if I was relieved or not. it was, you know what I mean? Like, at least
it's shorter.
It's shorter. It's less dense.
Yeah.
It's both people's. They're both terrible, terrible albums to choose from. So, yeah, I mean, what was your reaction?
I was a little relieved, but the downside is that means Lulu is eligible for next year. And looking at the way Lulu ran the tournament, this was the only challenge Lulu saw. It pretty much blew the doors off every one it went up against. I almost want to ban a Lulu from further competition for some kind of substance abuse, some sort of like, you know, cheating scandal.
You know what? I think right now we call it Lulu is off the table because it's not an official band release.
Hey, there we go.
It's neither a Lou Reed nor a Metallica release. It's somewhere, it's a solo random project. I don't know. What do you think?
If any type of loophole we can come up with, I'm going to support.
Please, let's write it up.
All right. Well, let me get into some more of these Amazon reviews for Peter's album, because I couldn't read too many of them without exposing who it was. So one of this is listed as the top critical review. This comes from a guy named Jamie Fury, who says, "What the fuck? Sadly, Peter Criss has lost his way on this album. Songs have no punch to them, and they pass with a whimper." Here's a positive one. The Catman roars back. This review opens up with, "Before anything else, I'm a Kiss fan since I was 9. So now we already know this guy has no objectivity. While I can't equal the previous reviewer in breaking this work down academically as he can, I will say I love it. It's very touching and it's very Peter." I happen to agree that this is very much a Peter Criss album.
Can I add one comment to it? While you were reading that review, I could actually hear the sound of chips being crunched.
you might want to hold on to your chip comment.
Okay, go ahead.
Here's another one from, this just says Amazon customer. "One for all is nowhere as bad as the haters say. I don't get the hate for this album. I've been to 12-plus mom-and-pop stores and even more big retailers, including Best Buy, and never saw a copy of this album. Thanks to the homework challenge on the Three Sides of the Coin podcast, my reply to it and co-host Mark Cicchini and Amazon between 9:21 and 9:29, my Android device has spun Amazon's digital download 1 to 2 times a day for 9 days, this guy listened to it." So he goes on to give a fucking really boring review. Mark Cicchini can take credit for at least one digital sale of this album.
Oh, good.
All right. I got another one here from a guy named Steven Brosbeck. Brosdeck. Always love to have a Steven. "This CD is sad. It's depressing. I had to force myself to listen to it completely. Yes, it's that bad. I rated it 1 star because Amazon does not give me the option of 0 stars. Peter says this CD is for his fans. What fans want to hear this?"
I think that was actually me that wrote that. Very concise. And
it was posted very recently. You know, I actually purchased the album for this episode on Amazon, so I can go leave my own review here. All right, this is another one I liked from Jay Lenglet. "Oh God, drunk uncle at karaoke night. I really have to wonder about this guy's sanity. Sounds like it was recorded in someone's bathroom on a Tascam, and we'll get into that. Is he drunk? This is like a really bad demo tape from a 40-year-old used car salesman who decided to make a record one night with no previous training."
I think these guys are using our material.
Yeah. All right, I got one more I'm just going to read, and then I got a bit from an official review that I found, too. This is one more Amazon review. I'm just going to read the headline. This comes from Apparato Pop, whoever that is. "We should pay this guy not to make any more albums ever." So that was his reaction to listening to One for All. And from a place called Sputnik.com, this is the only official review I could find, and I'm just going to read the very first sentence. "I decided to be lazy tonight and write an easy review on a shitty album. It's easier to tear something down than build it up." So he goes on to give this 1 star out of 5. So,
if I could jump in here for a moment with all this research and talk that we're having so far. But as far as the actual awareness that this album existed, I just want to hit on a few things here, okay? So for me, I didn't actually know that this album was a thing, and that's coming from a Kiss fan, until maybe this podcast started, and that's an honest statement. For some reason, you know, this is the era where in early 2000s or whatever that Gene decided to share his asshole with the world and put out his solo album, and then randomly Live to Win came out around 05, 06 or whatever it was.
It was 06.
And then this was the third in line to kind of just come out. And if I remember right, since this came out in 07, this was before Ace's solo album Return came back too, right?
Yeah, Anomaly was 09, you're right.
09? Okay, mm-hmm. So this is a slow decade of coming out with releases. This thing, I never saw it, but even the album cover where it says One for All, and you see this globe, and if you notice on the globe, the United States is not even like whatever the picture they took, it's not even the right side of the globe where he lives. I believe okay. Australia is on the cover but when you look at that, it's got all the countries.
Yeah,
the
it's
side
got
of it,
the edge of the states. You see Africa and South America there.
All right, fine, whatever.
New York City's odd. In there.
But when you look at it, does it scream? Does the album cover represent what you think this thing is going to sound like to begin with?
No, not at all. And the album cover is horrible, and it's probably the best thing about the record.
okay, and the fact that the genre that it's even in is officially, per Wikipedia, soft rock, and on Megaforce. So you've got Megaforce as the label, and soft rock is the genre. Let's put those two things to get together to begin with. But so July 23rd, 2007. This is right when I think one of the reasons is life wise, I was moving and everything at the time, so somehow this slipped by. But this is the only I can just tell you that from that end of it, though, that is a Kiss release of either a solo project or whatever. This is the first album release that I was unaware of from this band that slipped by me. Do you see my meaning?
I do. Now, I was aware of it. I went to three Best Buys the day it came out because if you bought it at Best Buy, it there was like the early editions were going to be autographed by Peter.
Okay.
All three of them had no copies, which led me to believe all three of them probably had one copy. Now, this was like still when people were buying CDs, so it was still they were still putting these things out on the shelf, you know what I mean? But also, this is also like when someone like Peter, there wouldn't be 15 copies to each store. You'd get one or two. Anyway, after that, I really, other than when I was in a Best Buy or a record store, I stopped making an effort. I ended up streaming it a few years later, and I was like, I dodged a bullet with this one.
Okay.
And the weird thing is now as a collector, if I see this in a store and it's not ridiculously marked up, I'll probably pick it up. Just to have that little slot in my collection filled. But anyway, but that's more just as the music end. But although, who knows? I've been downsizing all that shit. I might look at that thing and go, do I really want this? Because I do know what it sounds like, especially after this fucking week. Did you have anything more you wanted to get in? Before we started the record, I had a snip, a piece from Peter's book I wanted to read.
Nothing specific. I just wanted to know a little bit about the any facts you have about the all-star band that he got together and things of that nature.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the musicians he's got listed on here. Now, Mark Montague, I know, was in his Chris Cat One project, and I think Mike McLaughlin was too, but my Google search machine isn't working right now, so I couldn't confirm that this morning. I forgot to take care of that ahead of time, so apologies to the listeners, but those two names stuck out to me. But then, of course, you got Will Lee, who apparently Peter paid a good chunk of money to come on and play five songs. There's one song Will agreed to play for free that we'll get to that'll probably...
Wait, Will Lee is from the World's Most Dangerous Band, yes?
Yes, the David Letterman show, the David Letterman house band, the late show, all that good stuff. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, he is, you know, also a well-seasoned studio musician. Him and Anton Figg get a ton of work, you know, which is why they really don't really fit in that kind of regular band dynamic. I think Anton Figg would tell you himself, the TV gig and then just being in New York doing studio work really fits him better than like joining a band, as much as people, you know, love his work with Freely's Comet and would like to see him do something like that. That was really never his bag.
Gotcha.
These guys are pros. They don't do drugs. They don't drink. They just show up on time, knock out the track, and go home. They don't want to hang out and potty.
Go ahead.
Beyond that, it says it was produced by Peter, right? We'll get into the production, but
anybody else you want to mention that's one of the musicians?
Not at this point. I mean, was there someone that you wanted to bring up? I mean, Paul Shaffer supposedly appears on a song or two. I don't know which
one. Yeah, that's really mean. Just imagining Paul Shaffer with him in any way, shape, or form is amusing to me.
I would like to mention that in the credits, it does not list any orchestra, even though Peter talks about learning how to mix a 20-string section of something like that. But we'll get into that as we go, too. But
one other thing, too, is just the fact that George Marino supposedly mastered this thing.
Well, you know, I believe that to a certain extent, but I don't think this thing was – I mean, I think George pressed a button and left the room if he did.
Okay. It's just a name that you usually – that's a bigger name. For
yeah, well, he
album.
Gets a lot of work, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But he also did all the first run of Kiss CDs, and a lot of those suck. So
Fair enough.
He might just be a guy who just works really hard and you know, cranks it out, but –
Okay.
All right. Just so a really quick snippet from Peter's book here. So this is he had basically just released the album. He had a record signing at the Village, a record store in the Village, which is I assume he's talking somewhere in New York City there. And things seemed to be looking good. So here after that, though, he says, "So imagine how devastated I was when the CD failed. I really believed it would sell. I thought the fans would want to scour the lyrics to see if there was any dirt in them. After all that work, recording, going into the city to mix it, like going all the way into the city to mix this thing, all that money, I was crushed. I never really wanted to wear all those hats. I'd rather be a member of a team than a boss any day. But I wasn't just one guy in a band. I was the guy. So this failure was all on me. I couldn't even blame the producer. I was the producer." Way to step up and take some ownership, Pete.
Hmm. Are you impressed?
It doesn't make me feel any better for sitting through that. Before we start the record, how many spins did you give it? I gave it about 5 or 6.
Well, for me, my process was a little different because I and this is not an exaggeration. I fell asleep multiple times.
Yeah.
Listening to this album. So I would listen to the first half several times, and then the second half was I'm gonna say I've heard it in full probably 3 times.
Okay,
but it was a struggle. I gotta tell you.
Yeah, it was not fun at any one of the listenings that I had.
No, I guess I'm not sure where you're going exactly here, but I'm just, you know, listening to this album, I can only imagine the Peter Criss party mixtape that he has for people coming over to his to his house, which has to be the most. When you're talking about like Will Lee and Paul Schaefer not hanging around to party,
right.
you gotta get out of there, man.
Yeah.
If this is the zone of stuff that you're playing all the time, and I understand this is a genre of music and everything like that, but still, I mean, oof, come on.
I wasn't surprised that it was ballady. That is kind of Peter's thing, but
there's good ballads. Listen, I'm not. You know what?
Why don't we start getting into it?
That's fine. Yeah, please, let's go.
All right. Well, one of the missed opportunities was not opening the album with track 2, but we'll get to that. So it opens up with the title track, One for All.
I left the church this morning on my way back home. When I got there, my wife was crying. She told me something went wrong. Oh, something went wrong. I sat and watched in amazement how the sky turned so black. Everywhere, oh, so scared. Felt like the world was ending. He sees the light.
Did you manage to stay awake through all of the first song?
I think actually the first time I did not, no. Because I finally committed. Because what I would do is it was almost like that like dreaded homework assignment or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd finally like lay down in the bed, put on the headphones for a second, grab some a paper to do some notes because I got to put the work in and yeah. Everything, knuckle down, as you like to say. And I would put it on. It would instantly be like a sleeping pill. So it took a few passes even to get through the first song. But I have to say that the first, if I could comment on this, is the fact that the first time I heard this, I laughed out loud because – many times, and this is one of many on this, is when Peter Criss comes in, he kind of comes in out of left field, like the Oogie Boogie Man, like poof, like his lyric, the way he hits his first line makes me laugh, and I did laugh out loud the first time I heard his vocals. So
around that 2 minute mark too, it just has that horrible. Look, Peter can sing, and I just think he needs someone to work with him. At least this album tells me if he produced it in his dining room, which is, by the way, I got that from his book, so I'm not making that up. He basically recorded the whole thing in his dining room at his house. But the vocal on so many of these songs, and this start off here, is just, it's a horrible take. It's not totally in key. He's clearly not using auto-tune or any type of pitch correction, but and then the slide guitar that comes in, I if you're a skilled guitar player who's never played slide, that's what this sounds like. Someone who's played guitar but like, you know what, I'm gonna give a crack at playing slide. So better than somebody who's never played guitar, a slide can do. But if you played slide guitar, this is very, I don't know, kind of embarrassing. And the drums, once the music combines together, the drums just mush. And I'll hammer on this a couple times when we get through this, but that there's bad EQing. And as someone, I think I can speak kind of expert level on the experience of teaching yourself Pro Tools. Now, I cannot teach Pro Tools. That's not what I'm saying. But I know what it's like to fucking beat your head against the wall when you go to mix something and go, well, that doesn't sound like the shit I buy, you know. And then I finally had someone come in that taught me EQ settings and actually did the EQ settings that I just saved. So I don't really understand the technology, but I know what this sounds like to me. Like when everything kind of comes together and it just kind of turns into mush where nothing pops, unless you just crank a level on something like his vocal, it's somebody who's really teaching themselves Pro Tools.
Well, yes, but you're not understanding that he was really going for – the part of the EQing was combining his Orange amps with the stick free pans that were in the dining room too, and like lining them up on the wall, having it balance off of a nice fresh pasta vajoule and everything that he'd cooked up. I mean, there's all these things you got to think about.
You're not going to sully the name of your favorite guitar amp, are you? By suggesting they used them on this record.
That's right.
That would validate me and crush your theory.
Yeah, whatever. But even with all those things that when you hear this, you're also thinking like, who, even with this opening track, like, who is this album for, man?
It's anybody one for all. It's for everybody, no, man.
No, all for zero. We've got the fact that he has. This definitely sounds like a song that was written by somebody that dropped out of school when he was 22.
I want to know, at what point did Peter look at whoever he was working with here and go, "This, you know what this needs? A kid's choir." We got to pray together.
I just want to know what parents allowed him to come into some dining room to record here.
Oh, well, I think we should get to the next track. What do you think?
Please.
Do you want to take the obvious joke here? The second track doesn't get any better than this?
Yes, the working title was A Warning.
Golden oldies fill my soul. Rhythm and blues and rock and roll. Let's listen now and get carried away.
Carried away,
yeah. And find ourselves back in the day, yeah.
Back in the day, yeah.
It doesn't get better than this.
It doesn't get better.
It doesn't get better than this.
No, it doesn't get better.
It doesn't get better than this.
No, 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 it doesn't get better.
Now that we're alone.
Yeah, I thought this should have been the lead track, and then kind of some disclaimer. You know, almost like you just pulled into a cul-de-sac, and you saw that sign that said no exit. You know,
yeah, no outlet.
Yeah, so this is it doesn't get any better than this. Should have been the title of the album. It should have been the first song.
And everything.
I'm surprised I didn't see that in every review. This just joke sets itself up.
It really does.
You and I message it to each other.
It's just right there. It's low hanging fruit. Low hanging fruit. That was also the title.
There's nothing like a cat. No.
That would have been a great title. Low hanging fruit. Oh, man.
This is the only positive I have to say on this whole album. The best part of this entire album is when the other person sings.
It's called a duet, but it's really she just kind of hovering behind him on these lines. They're not really trading vocals.
Sure.
But it's a singer named Jennifer C. Johnson. I actually did some web search looking for this woman, but when your name is Jennifer Johnson, probably change it if you're going to go into entertainment, because there's a few Jennifer Johnsons out there. I did, however, through a website, Jocelyn Herman and Associates, which is some sort of entertainment booking agency, I found the Jennifer C. Johnson's resume. She even lists this working on this record among her television and film work.
Excellent.
So here's some things she's done. Wu-Tang, An American Saga on Hulu. At some point, she was involved in that somehow. I don't know if she was as an actress or as a she sings that or something like that.
She was part of the Wu-Tang Clan. Are you kidding me?
She played Big Baby Jesus.
Okay.
I don't know what she did. This you would think it would. It just says featured. So I guess I don't know if that means like a singer or something like that. She sang on the commercial 1-800 limo. She was a featured guest routinely on Imus in the Morning. She's a founding member of something called Chicks with Shticks. So she does some comedy or improv or something like that, and that was at some comedy festival. She's done a lot of theater work in New York City, but she has a list of skills that she also things down here. I would like to bring some of these to your attention.
I'm already impressed with the resume so far. So
yeah, I'll tell you right now, she should not be judged by her appearance on this Peter Criss record. She seems like a very talented person from what I could find out. Okay. She knows how to drive a stick. Loose.
Hey now. All right. Excellent.
Kind of an odd thing to put on here, but you know, hey, if you need someone who can drive a stick, do you think any member of KISS can drive a stick?
No.
If anybody can, it's Paul, only because he's the only one who really probably was actually out there driving early enough, but there's no way.
Ace can. He just doesn't know how to drive a brake.
She can juggle scarves.
Okay.
That seems a lot easier than juggling balls, but.
Hold on for a second. Juggling scarves. I think I can juggle scarves.
That's what I was getting at. It's not like they just float around.
Yeah, you just go get coffee, come back. There they are, floating.
Okay. So some other things she brings to the table. She can do a Munchkin voice.
This is my best Munchkin voice. Hey.
Bob, this is my Munchkin voice too.
All right. Well, we can. Can you? Hey, how about this? Let's go. Let's see how many of these we can both do. So I can drive a stick. How about you?
It's been a while, but yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're both
check.
Yeah. All right. I've never juggled scarves, but I'm going to put it that I can.
Ascots. I can juggle ascots.
And I think we both just proved we're excellent Munchkin voicers.
Bluff.
How about ice skating? Can you ice skate?
I can.
All right. That's 4 for 4. Roller skating.
Baby, if I can ice skate, you can roller skate.
How about roller blading?
Both. I was going to say, I put both of those in my skill set, yes.
And I know you to be able to ski, so we can both ski. Mm-hmm.
What
about general swimming?
What is general swimming? Just basically not drowning?
Yeah, I guess.
Yes.
All right.
I could do all 4 strokes, bro.
So I guess we should contact this agency and let them know that they can start booking us for work, too. But no, seriously, she seems to at least, you know, as a behind-the-scenes kind of person, have a pretty successful career. I mention that because I think her vocal on here is horrible. Now, I don't think it's her, though. I think because I'm starting to think that 2 songs in, my initial thought is probably can't judge any of the musicians' performances on this record. I'm guessing this is a horrible setup. It's hard to hear yourself, hard to monitor, and she was probably in key to begin with, but then when Peter started, or she was probably in key with the track, but not with Peter, because Peter's just a little off key and nobody ever took care of that. So, and also listing off the members of the Beatles is that we should make a rule. That does not count as writing lyrics.
Don't get better than this.
It Summarized. Does not. It does not. Did you have anything to add besides Jen's resume?
No, I think that...
All due respect, Jen, it seems like you actually have a lot going for you, so I don't want to trash her too bad because I think it's unfair.
It absolutely is unfair. I mean, to a fellow ice skater, we don't want to be insulting.
Right. Yes, us Munchkin voicers need to stick together.
But that's right. I love it. That's the most random thing. I want to just have that is if you have a job application, you list those 13 things you have to have as a minimum requirement.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know what? If, we should put on our own like want ad for an employee and then come up with the qualifications that we need that person to meet. And those are definitely on there.
Mm-hmm.
If I need you to drive a stick to take me to go skiing or ice skating and do a Munchkin voice on the way, those all have to happen.
That is correct.
Well, the next song, track 3, is Last Night.
Last night I could feel it was over. By the way you touched my cheek. All your kisses were much colder. Did you think I couldn't see? All the years must count for something. I gave you everything I had. But the one thing that was missing.
Some sort of flamenco piece of shit. I don't know. What do you got here?
Well, first off, we're 3 tracks in, and every bit of musicianship on here is, you're talking about the resume we're talking about. Sounds like a resume of somebody doing background karaoke tracks.
Yes.
I'm talking about those karaoke tracks that are, you know, the cover music, because you can't use the original track. It sounds like somebody that can function on guitar. They can do, like you said, can do the slide guitar. They can do all these elements, but do them really, like, can you play guitar? Yes. And
yes,
get
ish.
Through it. Ish.
Yes.
Right?
I play guitar-ish.
Yeah, ish. Everything is ish and things like that. And again, I'm 3 tracks in here, and I am yearning. Like I am thinking this now, I actually am not going to be too critical about Paul and Gene for writing a song for Peter called I Finally Found My Way, which is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Almost as a prank to him. But that, I don't want to be a spoiler. That song is a frigging masterpiece compared to anything else on this. This is like,
well, at least the vocals recorded properly.
Yeah, all that stuff. Everything here is a shittier version of I Finally Found My Way. And it makes me yearn for, you know, all of Peter Criss's solo album in 1978 too. And we selected none of those songs for what we thought would be an actual solid album. But all those songs are better than any of these songs. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, I personally really like the 78 solo album by Peter. None of those songs would fit on a Kiss record, but it for that record, it was smooth and consistent. And I like it much better than anything I've heard from the Soul Station project that Paul's doing right now. So I'm not a hater of that record or that kind of music. So far in, we have not had a good song, though. You have a string arrangement on this one, courtesy of Casio. There is not
who's the musician?
Casio.
Oh, Yamaha.
No, that's too expensive. I'm not hearing Yamaha quality keys putting these strings together.
That's fair.
That's not a good melody, and frankly, it's another bad vocal recording. Even as weak as a song is, he's not performing it very well either is what I'm getting at there. I'm starting to think now why Zeus from Shout It Out Loudcast got so defensive about Peter when he like released that karaoke video of him at home recently singing Don't You Let Me Down. I'd rather listen to Peter sing karaoke in some bouncy ballroom in his house to that song than anything I've heard so far.
I like Peter Criss as a singer.
Yeah.
Like when he used to sing back in the day. I mean, the reason that Black Diamond is amazing is because of him. He is, you know, those raspy vocals. He had the songs that I was just dropping a line from. I dropped out of school when I was 22. The just stupid lyrics and everything like that. Still, Hooligan, his voice sounds great on it.
Yeah.
Baby Driver, dumb song. Still,
I like Baby Driver. Glass
rock. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is, it doesn't matter how much you put hate on him. He's got a cool voice.
He really does. Yeah. I think you underutilized in Kiss, probably to the egos of a couple guys in the band. And then once Ace started singing, it was even less room for him. But because he does. I really can't stand Beth, but it's a great vocal. I've never really complained about his vocal recordings when he's had someone properly recording him. I like Out of Control better than Let Me Rock You as far as his post-Kiss stuff. But even those, it's not too bad. I mean, he's recorded well is all I'm getting at. I think the guy can sing, but he needs somebody in there that has an ear and knows when it's not good. And I don't think he had that here.
No, but the other part about it is the fact that
Vinnie Poncho was not going to work in his dining room.
You know that part that's kind of unbelievable where Paul says that he doesn't understand the difference between a verse and a chorus,
yeah,
or a bridge or whatever like that? I kind of believe it on this album, though, with some of these crazy-ass arrangements, right?
I don't know. I've seen Paul look at Peter and say, let's take it from the chorus, and they all pick up at the right spot. I think Peter knows what a fucking chorus is. Now, does he know how to write one?
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he writes like a drummer.
Yeah, there really is nothing to this song. Like I said, it's just, I don't know, they're going for some kind of flamenco thing, but
go ahead. Let's power through this.
Yeah, all right. Thing. Up next is What a Difference a Day Make, and not when you're listening to this record.
What a difference they make. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers.
Now we get Universal Lounge Singer piece. By the 2000s, you could get a solid piano tone out of almost any keyboard, even a cheap Casio, right? This sounds like a really cheap fucking piano effect on a keyboard. It's just like, again, does anybody sit down and listen and go, like, Pete, this sounds like garbage. You're a professional musician. Do you really want to put this out there? And he's like, yeah. Oh, my God. And the fucking keyboard sounds out of tune. Everything is just played poorly. Is this supposed to be fucking smooth jazz? It's one of many songs on here that just go nowhere. I imagine this is how a posthumous rapper's album is made, you know, where it's just like, fuck it. Just, you got this rap track, and now we're just going to kind of create some shitty music underneath it and put it out.
Sure. And also, what I also enjoy is the first of many themes of rain and stormy days.
Yeah.
Because here's a man that it seems like half of his older songs involve rain.
Yeah. I can't stop the rain.
He can't stop writing about the rain on this album. So, where there used to be rain, my yesterday was blue deer, stormy nights. I mean, this is like, just a oof. I'm trying. At this point, even during this show, this is as I feared, where I am actually just, it is painful to both speak about and to listen to. And I have nothing else to say about this song. What's really bad about this album is for me, it's difficult to find something funny on here because it's just there. It's like, here's another song that was like the other songs, and it also sucked and it went nowhere.
Well, again, we get the Casio strings. This is probably the closest thing to a good song so far, but that's probably only by comparison. But maybe I liked it too because it was so short.
You're talking about Hope or What a Difference a Day Makes?
No, I guess I skipped to Hope.
Yes, you did. See, that's my point.
Well, let's skip from that to Faces in the Crowd.
You were there to lift me up when things got bad. The road gets lonely. You were there to get me by the good and the bad, the times that
that we share.
The digital copy I bought from Amazon, the official release, they call this Faces in the Ground.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say. And I was like, when I first saw the title, I was like, what the hell does that mean? Does that mean dead bodies? Does that mean anything like that? So Faces, yeah, that's amazing that it's Faces in the Ground. I'm glad you had that too, because that's what I have as well.
Do you have anything on the lyrics? Because to me, this is right out of the old Ace Frehley pat yourself on the back type of thing here. It's like he's talking about the fans that have you know given him his career, but it's like the way he phrases it kind of comes off like, you know, oh, when you heap praise upon my greatness that I so deserve, I'm really glad I'm able to give that ability for you to give me praise. Kind of, as a legendary drummer, I'm just glad that people can enjoy my legend.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, and I love that crowd and reverb. You talk about fucking bad EQing. I guarantee that was the free reverb package that comes with Pro Tools, that they did not use a high-end reverb. And also, because it's poorly EQ'd, it just turns into mush. When they're probably recording the vocal, it sounds fine. And then when they dump the crowd in, it's fine. But when they mix all that with the music, it sounds like fucking shit. And they go, this is pretty good. Let's master it.
What I think was great was this is inspired by when they thought Peter was homeless. So that was his inspiration. When the paper said I was down and out, you were there to understand. And I got a guest appearance on Oprah Winfrey. Was the
Donahue.
Donahue. That's right, Donahue.
Don't
Faces,
sully the name of Oprah.
But I really was pissed off the fact that this actually was not Faces in the Ground, because I thought it was going to be talking about dead people or stuff like that, and things were going to take a dark turn. But unfortunately, it's just the Kiss track We Are One with a Head Injury.
Well, I was looking forward to the next track probably the most, and I would say it did not disappoint.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Where are the clowns? Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can move. Where are the clowns? Send in clowns. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again, my usual plan, sure of my line.
Yeah, it's a Stephen Sondheim song, wrote like 80 years ago.
Right. So the lyrical content of this, let's take out Peter Criss. When was this like a way of describing things in the world?
Right. Like because clearly Peter is not aware of like the changing overall view of clowns in the last 30, 40 years, right? They are not like signs of joy. You know what I mean? They scare people. They're typically the main character in a horror movie if they're in any work at all nowadays. Yeah. So yeah, the context doesn't really relate in 2007. That was intended when it was written, like I said, in 1841.
So if I understand this, because this is the first time I've ever heard this song. I've heard of the title of the song, and instantly from even the title, I think somehow throughout my life I've just avoided it. But so just so everybody understands out there, so Send in the Clowns means basically things are going so great that now it's time to send in the clowns because this is euphoria.
Well, the message here is like things aren't, you know, what I need is to be cheered up right now. We need to be happier. Was this written like during the Great Depression? I know it's old, but like send in the clowns and make us smile. Let's all kind of just enjoy life for a moment, you know, because it's also very, melancholic in how it's delivered. He's not taking a new slant on it. This is how the song has always been performed that I've seen. But, if Sinatra did it, it wouldn't surprise me. Tony Bennett's probably played it. Like I said, seeing it probably on variety shows in the 70s is where my head would go with it. Like I mentioned, Liza Minnelli, maybe. I got to believe that she's – Bette Midler's probably fucking sung this thing. Barry Manilow.
I can almost see like Doc McGee using this as almost like a rallying cry before he sends Kiss on the stage.
Where they do that little high five and
yeah, they do that high five and stuff like Send in the Clowns. I mean, in the subtext, you kind of think clown makeup, Kiss. I mean, do you think that had anything to do with it? And then
I think it was a bad choice for many reasons. And one of it being that you were a member of Kiss who put on, you know, makeup that could be, you know, called clown. It has been definitely called clownish over the years by somebody. I imagine Paul Stanley using this at like dinner parties to bash Peter, you know, to people like, this is horrible. You fucking believe this? Listen to this. So
this is the part where when his vocals come in, this is another part time that I laughed out loud, like I was listening to a comedy album, because he does come in like the Oogie Boogie Man, like one of those old Halloween songs where just out of it, it's the timing of it. I'm not sure if it's just because it's all off key, but almost like when he starts singing is not when he should be start to sing on the music. So it's like startles you.
Well,
so.
I wanted to talk about Will Lee a little bit in context of this song. Now, he played on five tracks, and apparently Peter claims to be close friends with Paul Schaefer, and that's how they hooked the whole thing up. But he says, but Will's a pro, he has a fee, and we paid it. But when he was packing up, he said, hey, I heard that rendition of you're doing of Send in the Clowns. I'll do that one for free. Now, you probably didn't notice it because you didn't know this story, but you know what you won't hear on this song?
What's that?
Bass. Yeah. There's no bass guitar. No. Yeah, so he did do it for free. He left the room and said, go ahead and use what I didn't record.
I mean, part of the lyrics is losing my timing this late in my career. Yeah, that's accurate.
Spot on.
Apparently, Send in the Clowns is Sondheim's most popular and recorded song as well.
Probably. I mean, it's like I said, I looked up the list of people who have done it, and it's fucking endless. But yeah, did you find out what year it was written?
1973, which I would have thought this came out in 1940s.
Yeah, not as old as I thought it was, but still, I don't know, whatever. Good on you, Pete. Oh, let's get to the next track. We only got a handful left here. Let's see if we can get through all of them. Now, I was listening to this while driving, so sleeping, falling asleep while listening to it became problematic after a while.
Yes.
So thankfully, Send in the Clowns at least didn't. There's some comedic value to it, so I was able to stay awake for that one. The next track, Falling All Over Again.
We have it all, yeah we do.
Another contender for it. Not that bad. But again, I think a lot of that is just by comparison, you know.
This is the bluesy one?
Yeah, and it's probably the cleanest recorded track. It's got a decent mix, and the vocals on it are okay. And probably for the first time, the drums sound all right. But then you get to the guitar solo, which really has that harpsichord effect that brought me, honestly, back to God Bless the Children of the Beast from Shout at the Devil.
Okay, then.
It's kind of a weird thing to throw into this. It's like you finally kind of get where you're going here, and then there's like, bam, some oddball fucking thing that doesn't fit. And again, I don't think you have proper direction. Peter is not a guy. Like he says it himself, he prefers to not be the guy. And probably because he knows he can't be the guy. You know, when he's the boss, nobody shows up. But anyway.
Understood. I've got nothing. I've got just the fact that this is another like a guitar solo or whatnot that just sounds like a guy that hey, play some blues. And
right.
Just kind of like mechanically goes through it.
It's kind of like maybe Tommy Thayer played on it.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
An emulator.
Again,
I did that on purpose.
just painful. And again, I'm like, who is this album for? Who is this marketed for? This is like the same thing as the country artists album of the Motley Crue country artists. Like, who exactly is this for? Is this for the country artist that wants a Motley Crue?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah. Well, I think the answer is probably, you know, this is Occam's razor. You're overthinking it. Kiss fans are gullible, and that's who it's for. It's for Kiss fans because they'll buy anything.
Okay.
I literally just said I'll probably buy it used. What kind of sucker am I? I think the album's horrible and I might pick it up.
That's more of a, I think that's even less a Kiss fan thing and more of a completionist, obsessive compulsiveness.
Yeah, my therapist has been saying the same thing for years.
Exactly.
But,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, we'll get to the next track here. It's called Whisper. We get Beatnik Pete now.
To myself, time to get up, do something. It was raining, oh, raining. Time has a way of slipping each day. Everywhere, I don't care. I'd just rather lie here. Whisper, whisper.
Yes.
Now he's branching out, baby.
You know, one thing too is that you know, on the solo album, it was also shocking the fact that he didn't play drums on it. I thought that was so weird. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And on this one, he actually does play drums on it, so doesn't help.
No, at times, like when the toms would get muddy, I wonder if that was the whole noodle arm Pete problem, because, you know, but I really think it was just more of the recording and probably more the mixing and EQing that caught, because sonically, this record just turns into mush all over the place where, you know, it's hard to pick out the elements of what's being played.
I got to tell you, too, though, that at this point, I can only imagine that Peter's wife is getting slightly pissed off the fact that there's a fucking drum kit in the goddamn dining room blocking up everything, all these cords laying around. This is the studio that they're having in their home. This is a man.
Yeah, I mean, did he not have a fucking basement or a...
Yeah, any kind of...
Any other room to fucking do this in? I mean, that's the other thing, too. I don't know physically what the layout is, but just... You want kind of a dead room for the most part, especially if you're recording everything in there. Jesus, fuck.
I want to see pictures. I want to see evidence that this was actually a dining room, a converted dining room.
This was all just, everything was done on Casio next to the sofa while watching TV.
No, I'm just, every single album usually has on the inner sleeve, like pictures of, yeah, of the studio where it was recorded.
Every album.
You don't have the, a lot of them do.
Some.
Some. And everything like that will show that, or at least there'll be some evidence of that, the making of up to that. You know, I'm sure Megaforce put out a huge PR release prior to this album coming out, showing the dining room setup. I'm just curious about this.
I think Megaforce gave it its proper due, as far as they definitely promoted it as much as it deserved to be. But back to the track Whisper. This is sort of a Planet Caravan meets a Sinatra impersonator, not Sinatra himself. I love the line.
Thinking about this and that, as a matter of fact.
Just delivered beautifully. The next track was one that the one review, the official review, said this was, if there's a standout track, it was this one. It's Heart Behind the Hands.
There's a heart behind these hands. There's a soul beneath these clothes. There's a story behind these empty eyes. No one wants to know. But if you have the time to listen, then you might understand that in your very life lies in the hands of faith, like the heart behind these hands. Oh, yeah.
We're going back to the lounge, and I disagree with that guy. This is so fucking, this is, everything is bad again. It's like a bad recording of the singer. Bad vocal track is all I mean. Muddy ass drums. Love is your command. I think Pete thought the wedding song, Wedding Singer, was a drama and not a comedy. When I hear this, I think of that movie.
Well, for me, this instantly made, this is another one that I laughed out loud because of these lines. These lines, there's a heart behind these hands. There's a soul beneath these clothes. Just take this down. That right there, that lyric is so bad. It's like there's a dong beneath these drawers. There's a taint behind this sack.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Keep going here. Where is this going? Exactly?
There's a butthole behind this dingleberry.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is, I mean, I just, there's a soul behind these clothes.
Hey, you know what? March Madness, if nothing else, it got me to say dingleberry twice now.
See?
Exactly.
Thank you,
right
Pete.
There. And then it goes sideways. It goes, I once had me a fortune teller tell me about my life. She said, if no one's ever loved you, child, then everyone pays the price.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What is that fortune? That is, that fortune teller is confusing as fuck. That's not tarot cards.
That word vomit is tough to follow there.
It really is. Love is all we live for. It's God's one and only plan.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
What?
I'm just, it's Tony Robbins. But,
explain the pandemic then, Pete. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, man. It's the heart, but again, heart behind these hands. What does that even mean? Is this a craftsman? Is his hands just happen to be on his chest at the time? I don't even understand that lyric. You?
I don't. The whole thing is kind of mishmashy. If anything, it's kind of confusing because up to this point, it's just been like cliche titles. Faces in the crowd. See, like, Peter would never come up with Faces in the Ground, but Heart Behind These Hands. I don't. What is he? Is
See,
he holding it like his hands over his heart? Or
right, his hand right there. But also, I'm thinking this is like the ballad that this is the song that someone that does manual labor a lot. Like, for example, this sounds like a song that was written by somebody that used to be a microwave repairman or an oven cleaner.
Yeah, maybe that's what the one reviewer was talking about. Like a used car salesman with no experience went home one night when he was drunk and recorded an album.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Like he's working hard, and listen.
You know what? I can fucking sing. I fucking killed it at karaoke last night. I'm going to fucking go home and make a record. I just sold that fucking used Miata. I'm on top of the world.
There's a heart behind this hard work. that I am doing. That's the ballad of the oven cleaner.
I don't think Peter's worked that hard in his life, other than touring.
Well, that's, I'm sorry, that's Eric Carr. Eric Carr was the former oven cleaner.
Oh, right. Yeah, so maybe Eric Carr wrote this and Peter stole it.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm going deep there.
That is pretty deep. I like that. Good job.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, let's get to the next song, Memories.
Dreams do come true when I look at you. And I have all my memories. I look at scrapbooks and there we are. You and me, so carefree. I'm always gonna hold you close to my heart. Life is too short, so make a new start. And I'm always gonna hold you so close, so close to me, close to me. And I'm always gonna give you all that I have. So hold on tight to all your memories, and I'm always gonna hold you so close, so close to me, close to me.
This song is about remembering shit.
This gives me a warm, tender glow. It comes over me. Harmonies, melodies, and memories.
Again, the music kicks in and everything just turns to mush. Mm-hmm. Can't fucking, yeah. You know, nice job mixing.
And this lists him as a co-writer on every single song here, except for the clowns, of course. I'm not sure if he did the music. I don't know if he did the...
Yeah.
Him and his guitarist guy.
Yeah, he had a guy staying with him while he recorded it who kind of basically spearheaded the project. And I think he flew in from Japan to live with Peter for a few years. They recorded this from like 2004 till up to its release, but... So really productive. The fact that it took you 3 years to record 12 horrible songs, and record them poorly, like it did, you know, but that might be why some of them sound so different. They recorded so many years apart. They got a little bit better and maybe moved some stuff in the dining room to a different spot. Now it sounds a little different. You know, it's like having your microphone turn the wrong direction. You know what I mean?
Just to liven it up, can I just read some other lyrics?
Yeah, give it to us, man.
Okay, now please. Let's just, instead of talking about these lyrics, let's just talk about these. My granny, she says I was a hooligan, running around like a fool again. I went down to the candy store. If I had a nickel, I'd buy some more. Your thoughts?
Well, I would appreciate hearing that right now as opposed to what's coming up here, but.
Okay, what about the, I got a 35 Chevy on a 55 frame. How shitty is that car? This is 1976 or 77. He's got a 1935 Chevy on a 55 frame.
You know, he's not being literal. He's talking about a kind of character, a type of person who would be known as a hooligan.
Okay.
He wouldn't go to school again.
I've never understood that whole thing.
Well, what he does, he took a 35 Chevy, but he dropped it on a 55 frame.
Right, but in 1976.
Yeah, well, we don't know what year the story is. He never really, he never gets to that. So.
Okay. Nothing else? Let's move on.
All right, well, the album closes mercifully with the track Space Ace.
Have you ever been like a spaceship? Lost in the sky? Flying high above highways, still trapped in the sky. I know you'll hear.
never been my
which is supposedly a diss track. Peter, go listen to John Lennon, How Do You Sleep? If you want to learn how to write a fucking diss track, man, listen to something that like, you know, that fucking knows how to do this. You know what I mean? Because this is one of the worst diss tracks I've ever heard in my life. So, yeah, apparently he felt was a bit of a backstabber in his last few years with Kiss. And
why? Why don't you elaborate on that? Maybe that's more interesting than any other.
My memory
else
is that I think Ace found they had the same manager, and Ace got $10,000 to show more than Peter did, and Ace told him that he was getting the same as Peter, so he lied to him.
Ah, well, that would explain the "Have you ever been locked in a spaceship and lost in all your lies because you got $20,000 and I only got $10,000"? Now that lyric makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and then Tommy Thayer got 50. Fuck that.
I did that on purpose.
Have you ever been flying high above the highways? How would you use high twice in the same line? Why aren't you saying at least roads or things like that?
Yeah,
that is a bad lyric.
I think he's trying to be... Actually, I think that's a stab at being clever. High in the highways.
Well, all I can tell you is that I think I summarized this pretty well when the first time I heard that, and that is that this sounds like a really bad David Bowie impersonation.
Yeah.
And then it ends randomly with a minute and a half porn music outro.
And what a great record closer too, huh? Well, yeah. Just...
Yeah. I mean, what's going on this? I mean, it never even
talk
says...
about cheap effects too. I bet you almost all the effects they got, they like downloaded from some like, you know, illegal site and got some free download, or it was like a trial run. Like, hey, you get the full effect for $50, but here's the sample of it for free. And they just downloaded it and threw it on there.
But my favorite on this is that they have a reverse echo, and that is that you start hearing what he's about to say in an echoey sound first, and then like the lyrics are like lost in the sky. It'll start like lost in the sky. It's like it goes that direction with the two in the left hand and the right hand to hear his lyrics.
Yeah,
did you notice that?
I did, but it's again a really fucking cheap reverse echo. It's, you know, there's versions of these things that are higher quality that process it at a much more proper rate for a professional recording. This is like doing something if you're a YouTuber.
Yes.
This is the free package of effects you get with GarageBand.
I do like the fact that in the lyrics, it actually says, "The beauty is the truth. You can look it into your eyes." And it says parentheses, "monkey noise and ack."
Yeah, those are some deep jokes there.
it says that. It says that in the lyrics, it says parentheses. I don't remember a monkey noise. Do you?
I don't know, but maybe it just got lost in the mix.
Maybe so. Yeah. And then it says parentheses, "jam out," and that's the porno music.
I don't even remember that part either. This is a very forgettable record. Thankfully, that I won't have to worry about any of these earworms getting stuck in my head a month from now. There you go, people. That is the March Madness album of 2021. This is largely a project of somebody latching on to Peter and kind of just taking advantage of a guy who really doesn't know better. You know, to me, he needs prose. He needs leadership. And he's a performer, not a creator. And I think, I don't know, maybe at now he – I think in 2007 he probably could have released a good record, even if it was all ballads. He could have done something quality of his first solo album if he had the right people around him. I'm guessing that either he just wasn't willing to sacrifice that kind of personal investment that it would have taken, or there just wasn't that level of interest and this was his only path. But the person that ended up writing a lot of this stuff with him, Charles Kipps and Mike McLaughlin, I think, is the one who lived in his house. I just think he took advantage of Pete a little bit, and there was no real effort into this. And it says it was mastered by George Marino, but this does not sound mastered. But I don't think they gave him much to work with if he did master it. He might have just got it so basically when you listen to the first song to the next song, they all level out about the same way, and that was the best he could do. I'd like to thank everybody who participated in the March Madness brackets and voted. I'm sorry, I did have a few listeners turn in their brackets. I'll try to pull those together and see if I can come up with some sort of winner there, but only a handful of people did them. So thanks to those who actually filled them out and turned them in. We'll try to kind of come up with some sort of at least mention of who would have won and what the scores would have been here in a future episode. I just didn't have that prepared for today.
There's a lot of terrible, terrible output from the KISS members as far as solo,
yep.
Their solo output. But this is by far the worst one as far as forgettable. You can say that things are awful. I can rag on Ace's stuff. A lot of his output, you know, obviously Gene Simmons' asshole album and things like that. But there's always, on all those, there's usually one or two things you're like, okay.
Yeah.
That was at least an attempt, or there was some kind of,
yeah,
like, I get what they were trying to do and did it wrong.
Well, there's even nothing. Moments like, let's say, Anomaly. I think Outer Space is a killer track. I like the song Black Tongue from Simmons' asshole record. So, yeah, there's usually something that you're like, well, I don't think the record's that good, but there's a couple tracks at least. There was nothing that latched on other than, like, to laugh at how bad some of it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you want, Pete? And then he would not do a damn thing for the next 10 years and then have a concert saying he was retiring. From what?
Well, let's think about the fact, too, that my main question is, where's Cat Number 2?
Yeah, That was a much better record. You know what? Compared to a lot of the KISS solo stuff, that Chris Cat one is one of the better ones.
I guess.
It's better than most of the Freely's Comet shit.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know what else to say.
It's better than Peter's other shit.
I feel that I've been locked in a spaceship for far too long. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, man, this has been fun, but this is always fun, but this one was a little tougher than I even think some of our other March Madnesses. So, but hey, the voters have spoken. So
they have.
This is what the voters wanted, so this is what they get. Rock's not dead.
But send in the clouds.
The ball is hit. There you are. You're running for your life. A shooting star and all the years no one knows just how hard you worked, but now it shows. In one shining moment you reached deep inside. One shining moment you knew you were alive. Feel the beat of your heart, feel the wind in your face. It's more than a contest, it's more than a race.
So I kind of know what he's saying, but, you know, Jesus could have used that kind of help, you know, a couple thousand years ago. You know, I mean, like, well, I have to die for everybody. You know, that joke didn't land. what do you got on this one, man?
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.